This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Have anything interesting to eat today? Beef from Spain? Cheese from France? An apple from Chile? Or perhaps bread from the farm across town? Vegetables from your own backyard? Tanya Cobb is hoping it's much more likely you'll answer yes to those last two questions rather than the previous few. No longer just an activist for the local food movement, she's now an author with a new book that examines in extensive detail how a grassroots push for locally originating eats has been, well, mushrooming across America. That book, Reclaiming Our Food, is the starting point this hour. But if you've got anything to say about where our meals come from, you're most welcome to join in at 888-WMRA-TALK. The conversation begins right after the news. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. Got thoughts about America's food supply systems? Questions about from whence your food comes? Or how you can become more knowledgeable about what you eat? Then please do make note of our call-in number, 888-WMRA-TALK. We've already received a number of Facebook posts for today's show, and I am happy to read those. But if you're willing to give everybody a break from listening at great length to my voice reading other people's words, and you are feeling generous enough to let us hear your voice, then please do call us any point during the next hour at 888-967-2825. The book is titled Reclaiming Our Food, How the Grassroots Food Movement is Changing the Way We Eat. Its author has long been active in concerns touching both upon the environment and community mediation. She was one of the founders of the group Greener Harrisonburg, the founding executive director of the Virginia Urban Forest Council, and today, from her base in Charlottesville, serves as associate director of the Institute for Environmental Negotiation. Tanya Denklin Cobb, thank you for making time for us.
Thank you for having me here.
So how is, Tanya, how is the grassroots food movement changing the way we eat?
Well, Tom, in just about every way that we might imagine and more, it starts with how we're producing our food and encouraging new farmers to take root, pardon the pun, and to our distribution systems, which we've lost over the last 50 years and we're now regrowing. To increasing local processing, flash freezing, refrigeration, cannery, kind of community facilities, to one of the most important aspects of the grassroots food movement is increasing access. And increasing access of fresh, healthy food to all people. And so one of the things I really hope people will take away when they read my book is that this movement, contrary to what a lot of people have been saying over the last number of years, is this movement ain't elitist at all. This is about all people, for all people, by all people. In fact, you know, one of the things it reminds me a lot of is what's happening with the Occupy movement. And
Occupy Wall Street?
Yes,
Occupy...
indeed. Yes, and now there's Occupy Our Food movement. Occupy, exactly. It's a movement that is taking us back to the most basic form of democracy that we can hope to revive, which is taking control and power back into our hands.
So explain to me what the grassroots food movement is, or even what grassroots food is. Are we just simply talking about people buying local?
It's about every aspect of it. It's about people who are wanting to reconnect with their food in a new and different way. But it's beyond food, Tom. That's one of the things that I discovered in researching this book, is that it's way beyond food. It's when I interviewed people for this book, I ended up finding out that, well, maybe they wanted to start a community garden. But if I kept asking and kept digging, well, why did you want to start a community garden? Or why did you want to establish this community farm with a community supported agriculture, which is a kind of a shareholder's way of getting access to food in a community. Or I want to set up a community kitchen or whatever it is. If I asked why, inevitably it came down to something else. It came down to people wanting to reconnect with their land or with their animals or with their family, that they wanted to be able to offer fresh, healthy food to their family, which meant that maybe they needed to learn how to cook along the way, or they wanted to reconnect with their community and to help build their community, building connections. And so it's about all of these different things.
Does the term reconnect, I heard you a moment ago, Tanya, I think say that it's about reconnecting with their food in a new and different way. So does that simply imply that people are doing something that everybody used to do and take for granted, if it's reconnect?
It is, but it's in the 21st century modality. So, for example, let me give you an example. Today, we have a thing. You've heard of flash mobs. Well, today, there's a thing called a crop mob. So that never happened before. I mean, in a sense, maybe it did, is the earlier version of a crop mob was old-fashioned barn raising. But today we call it a crop mob, and we advertise that a particular event is going to happen on a farm, and this farmer needs help harvesting sweet potatoes or putting in the beans or whatever it is, and it's posted through social media, so it's appealing to a lot of 20-somethings, maybe even 30-somethings, and there's no commitment beyond that day, and you show up. And you get some food, and there's some rules in the sense that, you are partaking in this group, and you're not probably stuffing hordes of tomatoes into bags that you're going to take away with you. But basically, we are reconnecting and finding new ways in the 21st century that never could have existed before, ways that we're reconnecting with our food. For example, we have now online farmers markets. Never had that before. And now you can get it delivered, right? So we are reconnecting. We are doing things that we used to do, but we're doing them in new ways that fit our new society.
Tanya Dinkla Cobb, and I'm pronouncing the middle part correct?
Absolutely.
Close. Okay. Lay the foundation for me. What is the basic? I realize that because I've read much of your book that we can go probably in 1,000 different directions. And the book is not much of it, but not all of it is written by you. It's basically a compilation of reports of different things connected to what people are doing with food all over the country, in different communities all over the country. Right.
Right, it is.
Okay. So what I was hoping to get you to do, Tanya, is to just sort of lay the simplest foundation for me and for anybody listening who might hear the term grassroots food movement. Well, I think I know what that means, but I'm not absolutely sure.
Okay. All right, let me take a crack. And if I don't do it, you pull me back.
Well, just think of me as being really simple and needing a really simple explanation. And,
okay.
And then you'll probably be on target.
Okay. So that's I don't think of you that way, but I understand what you're getting at. So let me say that a movement is distinct from an event or a project in that it's about a number of people that are simultaneously realizing a common vision, if you will. And that's really what constitutes a movement. And this is, in many ways, a social movement because
it has to do with social justice. It has to do something with food.
Right.
And
people are somehow dissatisfied
with what we got to in the 60s and 70s and 80s of thinking that food comes from the supermarket.
Exactly. That's it. So what's happening is not spontaneously, but over a number of years, people have come to realize that our current food system is not meeting certain needs. We don't know where our food has come from. people say that our current food system has all kind of economies of scale. And what they forget is that there are all kinds of inefficiencies in our current food system. So we no longer know where our food comes from. We don't know what's in it. Some say, and the proof, sorry for the pun, is in the pudding, but we now have an obesity epidemic that is taking our country by storm. The cost of that is about $117 billion a year, and that was...
Well, back up for me moment. We don't know where our food is coming from, and that's
so
the bottom line sense of what's bad about our food system.
Well,
is that somehow getting to the point of just assuming that what we're getting is good for us.
Exactly.
Is a bad thing.
Right. So what happens is we don't know where our food's coming from. We walk into the grocery store. We end up in the center aisles where high fructose corn syrup is in just about everything that's there, including things that it didn't used to be in, like tomato sauce, et cetera, where it doesn't belong. And we end up on a sugar-packed kind of diet. And so is it any surprise that we end up with these unintended consequences of this incredibly so-called efficient food system that is supposed to be giving us food that is cheap? Well, Robert Heinlein used to say, or I loved when he would say, there ain't no such thing as a free lunch. There ain't no such thing as a cheap lunch. Our country is based on a cheap food policy. What we're finding are the costs of that. I'm getting there. So the grassroots food.
I didn't say anything.
Hang with me. So these things are happening. These arguments are being made about why we should trust what's in our grocery store, right? And yet these costs, these unintended costs are building up. Unintended costs in obesity, unintended costs of in our environment, where we now have 40,000 polluted waterways that are going to cost billions upon billions to clean up. Okay, so we walk into the grocery store and we have trust. And we buy whatever we want. And what happens are all this cascade of unintended consequences that slowly people start waking up and saying, wait a minute, is this what I want to be happening to me, to my family, to my children, to my neighborhood, to my community? Don't I want to know the farmer if I can? If there's a farmer, for example, let me take...
Before you get the example, there's thousands of people who have tuned in since we started talking. So let me tell them that the book is titled Reclaiming Our Food, How the Grassroots Food Movement is Changing the Way We Eat. Its author, Tanya Denkla Cobb, is our guest. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. All of our phone lines are open at the moment at 888-WMRA-TALK, 888-967-2825. So as I threatened earlier, I'm going to read some of the Facebook posts, but I'm hoping that other people who have questions or comments will actually call and let us hear their voice at 888-967-2825. Tanya, the first post came in, I think, earlier this week from Kimberly, who says, thankfully, there are local vores, like many here in Charlottesville, that sustain and support the small local farmer. While it is difficult to completely move to a complete seasonal local food diet, it is wonderful, fresher, and more delicious to do so as much as possible. If more people insisted on local quality and seasonal freshness, many in agribusiness would have to adapt.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with her more. That's what's happened. That is what's happened, is the grassroots food movement has said that we want to have a connection with our food so it's fresh, so it's actually nourishing, and has the vitamins that we need, and is feeding our community, not only us, but is feeding our community. So I'm supporting my local farmer, and by supporting my local farmer, I'm supporting a host of other entities within my community.
So I have a whole bunch more Facebook comments to read, but we're also now starting to get some calls. And Meg in Harrisonburg, I want to let you know that you're first up when we get back from the break. And if you can remember it, Tanya, we'll get back to that example you wanted to give too in a bit more than 1 minute. You have Virginia Insight on your radio or streaming online at WMRA.org. I'm Tom Graham. Tanya Denkla Cobb's first book was titled The Organic Gardener's Home Reference, but it is her newest publication, a collection of stories about the grassroots food movement across America. That is our focus this hour. This new book, just released last month, is titled Reclaiming Our Food, and you have a passage that kind of gets to the point that you're making. Would you go ahead and read from page 73, please, Tanya?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Starts this way. Agriculture has not always been banished from our cities. In fact, an argument might be made, however unlikely it might now sound, that history will prove the 20th century more of an anomaly than the rule with its proclivity for denaturation. During the 20th century, as cities edged towards greater sanitation, they also edged toward the more sterile, rigid landscape, stripping cities of their connection to nature. Streams, now in the way of development, were hidden beneath paved streets and parking lots. Cattle, goats, pigs, chickens, and bees, no longer suitable for sophisticated city sensibilities, were considered unsanitary and a threat to property values. Moving people efficiently by cars meant that roads were designed without consideration for people traveling by bicycle or foot, often making it perilous to do so. And in the interest of car safety, road design commonly prevented median and roadside plantings of edible fruit trees and shrubs, as they could attract wildlife and create hazards. Car-based lifestyles and community design conspired to create the unintended and bizarre consequence of social food amnesia, with generations of urban children unaware of where their food comes from.
Tanya Denkla Cobb, reading from her new book, Reclaiming Our Food, How the Grassroots Food Movement is Changing the Way We Eat. Call a number if you want to talk to her, 888-WMRA-TALK. Part of the point that you're making is that's some of the history of how we got to where we got. And much of your book is what's about what's changing now. So we'll give you a chance to talk about what comes next in the book. But first, we have several calls. We're going to Meg in Harrisonburg. Meg, thank you for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for Tanya Cobb, please.
Yes, actually, I look forward to hearing more of what she was just talking about. But my question goes to what she was saying earlier about trusting the systems by which our food comes to us. And I'm wondering if she could speak a little bit to the way in which the USDA guidelines and control of big food industry lobbyists, or under the influence of big food industry lobbyists, create guidelines for the food that can be served and in what proportions in our city schools and in other institutions like daycares and care facilities for the elderly. It seems like some of those foods aren't so healthy or balanced to me, and certainly not necessarily locally connected. I'd like to hear more her talk a little bit about that.
Right. Great question, Meg. So basically what you're asking about is how is it that we can have a federal agency that is supporting the distribution in our schools and institutions of not-so-healthy food. And that's part of the story of how we got here, and it has to do with this whole policy of cheap food, the cheap food policy that I mentioned earlier. And what's happening with the grassroots food movement is that it is also slowly changing what we will be seeing in our schools and institutions. The farm-to-school movement is a key piece of the grassroots food movement. And it's now, in the last 5 years, it's grown so that it is now in every single state of the union. Now, in Harrisonburg, where you are fortunate to have a leader in our state, in our school system, Andrea Early, who has been leading the charge in changing what kinds of food we can have in our schools. And so one of the ways that this is changing at the grassroots at the local level is by creating a wellness policy for your school. And part of the wellness policy will spell out, well, what kinds of snacks we want, what kinds of do we allow, how much sugar do we allow? Do we in Charlottesville, we have a fight on right now about chocolate milk. Do we allow chocolate milk or not chocolate milk? It's not just Charlottesville. It's really everywhere that people are engaging in these really important conversations. And that's what the grassroots food movement is doing, is it's putting these questions on the table so that they're front and center, so that we'll think about them.
Tanya, I understand you're a mediator by training, and it's probably against your nature to say anything bad about anybody. But I suspect from Meg's question that she was wondering if you had any negative judgments about the USDA and how it, from Meg's view, seems to be promoting big agribusiness.
Oh, boy, you're really pushing me up against the wall there, Tom.
Well, let's check with Meg. Meg, was that part of your question?
That is part of my question. I watched.
Okay, so you got somebody here who's
angry moms, and that kind of got to it a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, I can say as a mom, as somebody who cares deeply about my food, it makes me angry too. It really does. I feel that what
makes you angry?
That we have reached this point in our society where junk is served.
And in terms of Meg's question about trusting the USDA,
right. Are
you...
Do I trust? No, I would say no, because I know how we got here and I know the forces that led us to here. So I would say that as part of the grassroots food movement, because I count myself among them, is that part of what has happened is the trust has been breached, is most people feel like they can no longer trust our food system. We now have outbreaks of E. coli, listeria, salmonella, recalls on food that we used to think we could trust. And that trust has been broken in so many ways. So I think that here's the mediator in me coming out, Tom. So I think that the federal government is trying to play catch up, and there are forces at work that are forcing them to do it. And the other thing is that there are corporations that are trying to play catch up as well. And so when we see a Walmart, and this is hugely controversial, when we see Walmart saying, oh, well, we need to sit up and take notice. We need to start sourcing more of our food locally. Then you know that this grassroots food movement has had an impact. And indeed it has. It's not going away. It's had an impact, and the USDA and others are paying attention. How? Well, I can keep going, Tom, but in the Farm Bill, for example, we had for the first time, we now have some, it's a tiny pittance, but it's some money that is going to support local food development. So people are getting grants, for example, to set up the local food hub in the Charlottesville area. They're getting grants to set up community farms. They're getting grants to set up distribution systems down in Southwest Virginia. And this is coming from the federal government that's slowly playing catch up. It has a long ways to go. And let me tell you, people are angry.
Meg, let me just double check. Do you feel you got your question answered?
I think so. I think what I look forward to is hearing new guidelines, because I think administrators of institutions that perhaps they aren't so into food themselves look to those guidelines as directing them, first of all, to how they can receive government monies for disadvantaged people, but also they assume then that those guidelines say this means that it's healthy. And so, but yes, she has addressed my question.
Well, thanks so much for taking the time to call us. Phone number 888-WMRA-TALK translates in all numbers to 888-967-2825. If you want to talk with author Tanya Denkla-Cobb about her new book, Reclaiming Our Food. Gabriella in Mount Jackson, am I pronouncing your first name correctly?
Yes, sir.
Well, thanks so much for calling in.
Yes, I'm a first-time caller, but I love the show. This is a fantastic topic, and it's one I care a lot about. And to build on the comments that were just made, I came to the Shenandoah Valley via Los Angeles and New York City, and I was working and teaching inner-city school children. And although this is, you often hear that children in the schools don't understand the source of their food, that's ever more the case in the inner city. And being here in an agricultural community has been such an opportunity because the more I learn about how our food is produced, I'm finding more that I care. And, you know, when you're standing in Whole Foods in Manhattan, trying to understand why you might pay $14 a pound for that grass-fed beef is harder to understand than after taking a farm tour, meeting a farmer, and hearing and learning more about their methods. So I'm very grateful for the topic, and I just wanted to weigh in. I've seen a real proliferation also in the last few years just in our community of finding it easier to locate some of these community-supported agricultural products, and even now recently finding a home delivery service that delivers our milk to our door, which is just a fantastic new thing. I can conserve on time and fuel by having the milk delivered with some other products from the local farms.
Gabriella, that's it's really great to hear from you, and it's really great to hear your story of how you ended up here. And one of the things, and your increasing awareness and consciousness about the importance of local food, one of the things you said really struck me about the cost of what was it, the meat in the grocery store?
Well, for grass-fed beef.
Grass-fed beef, right.
And in New York City.
One of the things that really struck me in doing this the research for this book is that so many people have lobbed criticism at our food movement, saying, oh, it's for elitist, it's the $5 tomato. And what I've discovered is that it's not at all about that. It's about a form of social justice, of making sure that people of all income levels can, in fact, afford this food. And hot off the presses from one of our friends down in Southwest Virginia, a fellow named Anthony Flaccaveno, he's just finished a study that is really fantastic because he's gone out and done some real number crunching. And this is in rural Virginia. He's found out that when you compare the produce available at farmers markets with that in supermarkets, he found that 74% of the communities, the produce was less expensive at the farmers markets than in the supermarkets. On average, less expensive by 22%. And when you now meat was a little bit dicier, but it still was not 100% more expensive when it's grass fed, free range meats. Organic also, he found organic is always said to be more expensive and not accessible to the average citizen. He found in 88% of the communities, organic produce was less expensive at the farmers markets than at the supermarkets. So, and then I've got all these stories in the book about these projects that are specifically aimed at, in fact, bringing fresh, healthy, nourishing food to people of low income, inner city kids like you used to work with up in New York. Or,
well, that,
yeah, go ahead.
That is the reason that I seek it out. I think I'm paying about 50% more for most of the products that I'm buying fresh from the farm, but I am more confident that it's not being treated with hormones and antibiotics. And I'm also raising a young child, and her awareness of nutrition has been really enhanced by the fact that we are traveling out to farms to pick up our farm fresh eggs and seeing the way the whole process that they use, the animal husbandry, that, you know, this is becoming increasingly important to me, and I'm very grateful that we have access to it.
Gabriella, based on what you've identified as your interests, I want to mention to you and anybody listening who has similar interests that a couple of months ago, back in September, we took a close-up look at a new documentary called American Meat, which is based in large part on a farm based in Virginia. And if you wanted to review that program, listen to any portion of it, all you have to do is to go to WMRA.org, click on the Virginia Insight archive page, and then scroll down to September and look for that discussion about the film American Meat.
I believe you're referring to the Polyface Farm in Stanton.
That is the main Virginia farm that was featured. And then, of course, there were some farms in the Midwest who are the typical, I guess are sometimes referred to as factory farms that were compared to what was going on at Polyface.
Right.
So thank you. Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
So, Gabriella, I thank you for saying what you did, because one of the things that you're raising is, in fact, this disparity between what we would call full cost pricing, and which is what you get when you buy that meat from the farm, is that you're paying for the full cost of that meat, whereas the subsidized foods that we get in the supermarket and the meats are subsidized because the grains are heavily subsidized. So the meat is mainly grain-fed, so you can trace it down the food line by saying our most of the food in our supermarket are subsidized. Therefore, we don't have full-cost pricing at the supermarket. We are not including in there the cost to environmental degradation to our waterways, with those 40,000 polluted waterways, into the cost of the hamburger at the end of the in the refrigerated aisle. And we're not including the cost of the obesity epidemic, for example, on the back end of our food, of what happens to us after we eat it. We're not including the cost in public health care into the sugar pops and the Wheaties and all the rest of our foods, the Twinkies, etc. So my question to people is, why are we putting our money into the back end? Why are we putting money into the back end of our system of paying for all the cleanup, paying for cleaning up our environment, cleaning up our people so that we are healthy, so that our environment is healthy? Why aren't we putting money into growing a new generation of farmers who can be good stewards of the land, who can be integrated into our community and support our community economies?
The book is titled Reclaiming Our Food, How the Grassroots Food Movement is Changing the Way We Eat. Its author, Tanya Denkla Cobb, is our guest. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Gabriella, thank you again so much for taking the time to call. We've got several phone lines open at 888-WMRA Talk. Looks like a couple of calls are going through the processing system, so we'll get to those in a moment. But if you are thinking about calling, then we've got room for you to call right now at 888-967-2825. Much of your book, Tanya, is made up of stories of people doing interesting things in their local community that are somehow connected to food. Want to tell us one of those stories? Well, in a shortened version.
A short version. Well, one of my favorite stories is actually right here in Virginia, and it's about Lynchburg Grows. It's a story of how a person with special needs had a garden in front of his house, and it was bulldozed down, and it created incredible hardship for him in many ways, and it caused people in the community to rise up and say, we want to do something about this. They found a place for him to garden. They then realized the power of gardening in transforming people's lives. That led these guys to reclaim about 6 acres in downtown Lynchburg with an abandoned, contaminated site to create a thriving urban farm.
I'm thinking there's a tag to that story. We'll get to it when we get back from the break. She is a former executive director of the Virginia Urban Forest Council, a co-founder of the group Greener Harrisonburg, and today serves as associate director of the Institute for Environmental Negotiation that's based at the University of Virginia. Her newest book is titled Reclaiming Our Food. Tanya Denkla Cobb is our guest. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight, and you wanted to wrap up that little tidbit of a story. You don't want to give it all away because you want people to read your book, right?
That's true.
You got dozens of it might be more than 100 of stories of people doing special things connected to food all over the country. But just give us the tagline to that 6 acres of community garden that were created in Lynchburg.
Transforming environment, transforming the lives of people with special needs, and providing fresh, healthy food to the community. How's that?
Anne in Charlottesville, thanks so much for joining us on Virginia Insight. It was wonderful. Your comment or question, please.
Okay. I'm a member of a grassroots food organization called Virginia Independent Consumers and Farms Association. I don't know if you've heard about it. It's a statewide group that's been around for about 10 years. And in fact, Joel Salatin was our founding president for a few years.
Yeah, sure. I know of VICFA, sure.
We should mention, for anybody listening who doesn't know, Joe Salatin is the owner of the Polyface Farms entity based in Swope that we mentioned earlier that is the focus of a new documentary called American Meat. Hopefully I've confused as many people as possible with that. So now that we've clarified who Joe Saladin is, please go ahead with the rest of your comment.
Okay. Well, what I was going to say, the organization's mission is to promote and preserve direct, unregulated trade between farmers and consumers, because we believe, and two of Joel's favorite words are trust and transparency. And if I'm a consumer and I wish to buy something from a farmer, whatever it is, I should be able to go to the farm, see how he does things, and buy it. But there's way too many regulations out there which make this kind of thing impossible without people trying to start small embryonic businesses having to jump through lots of hoops and things, which are often like way too expensive. So,
And hold on just a second, Tanya, I'm having a little trouble with Anne's cell phone signal, so I want to ask you, you were nodding your head while she was speaking. Tell us again the name of the organization
Virginia Independent Consumer and Farmers Association.
And from the way you were responding, I take it you know all about this.
Well, sure. I mean, I think what Anne is talking about is no secret in Virginia or really anywhere is that there are state regulations in every state, really, that do create hoops. And often those hoops are seen as barriers and challenges. And it certainly goes against the idea that Joel Salatin and other members of VICFA and even people who aren't members of VICFA, the Virginia Independent Consumers and Farmers Association, and their idea that there should be trust and transparency and that I should be able to have a direct barter exchange with you. And certainly this idea is gaining strength in the country. And there are certain states, certain localities that have even adopted a thing called food sovereignty resolutions. And a food sovereignty resolution basically says what Anne is talking about, which is that we have the right, one of our basic human democratic rights is the right to be able to grow food and the right to be able to exchange food, because food is a basic human right. And that no, the food sovereignty resolutions that are being passed in the country say that no federal regulation shall overtake this local democratic basic human right. Now, in Virginia, my feeling is that if this is something that we want, then it's, you know, it's the power of the vote. We need to have, you know, then VICFA needs to float somebody who will take this issue to the legislature and or to a locality, because in Maine, I think it was a local community, maybe, you know. So it's, my thought is that this is taking hold. And if there is enough support for this, then it needs to be taken to the level where there is a resolution of support along those lines.
Anne, did you have something else that you wanted to add quickly?
Yes. On March the 3rd next year, we're having a great food event in Richmond. Joel Salatin and Will Allen are the speakers. Will Allen organizes incredible inner-city food production systems. And they're both coming to Virginia next March, and there'll be information on the website.
Which website?
VICFA.
VICFA.
VICFA website. There'll be information up there.
Anne, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
In a recent debate of some of the Virginia candidates for U.S. Senate, one of the contenders, who identifies with the Tea Party movement, said it was time for government to stop interfering with our lives, doing things like telling us what kind of light bulbs we can buy and what details have to be printed on food labels. So, to you who are listening, I wonder, do you think government is too intrusively involved with our food systems, or is it your view that the opposite is true? 888-WMRA-TALK is our phone number, 888-967-2825. Or if you prefer to type instead of talk, you can reach us on Facebook at WMRA's Virginia Insight. Our guest, Tanya Denkla Cobb, is author of the new book, Reclaiming Our Food.
Wow, what an incredible lead-in question, Tom. That's a great question. And one of the things that's really fascinating about this food movement is that it crosses all party lines. The food sovereignty resolutions that I just mentioned to Ann in Charlottesville, they drew from all across party lines. And there was support from both sides of the aisle, if you will, for that. So that's one of the most fascinating things about...
So the local food movement is not just a liberal conspiracy?
Oh my gosh, it has nothing to do with party politics. It has to do with something more basic, more profound, which is our food, our nourishing. There's very few things we need to survive. Very few. And one of them is food. And so it goes to a very core center, you might say. Some call it the reptilian part of our brain, you know, this very core part of our brain that causes these instinctive responses, you know. And so I think that's why it's not about party politics. It's about something very fundamental.
Here on Facebook, we have Carolyn who says, I feel like I've seen what we eat go there and back again. From home to factory farms, back to home again. And we've learned a valuable yet tragic lesson along the way, not just in terms of the global environment, but in terms of personal health. When I was in high school back in the 1970s, I knew one, only one, obese teen. Look what happened. Now, she wrote this before the show started today, but it sounds like she's in your camp.
Well, she's in the camp of the grassroots food movement. She's part of it if she sees that the food is coming back home. And one of the things that I want to talk about here that she's saying is that we've come full circle, but not quite. Not quite. I don't think we're going to see the end of this industrial food system. What I think we're going to see is an amalgam. I think we're going to see that the industrial food system is going to have to adapt and is going to have to learn how to raise food more sustainably.
But Tanya, in your book, you tell all these fascinating stories from all over the country. I think that there's some from the San Francisco area, from Boston, from St. Louis, and from small towns all across America, as well as large cities. Pick another one, if you would, of what some one person or some group of people have decided to do that you think exemplifies a point about local food.
I will, but let me do. I just want to finish this first, Tom. Is that the issue of can we feed ourselves from home is really important, because that's an argument that's made against the grassroots food movement. And I want to say that at the height of the Victory Gardens movement during World War II, is some statistics say that we were able to grow as much as 46% of our food from our kitchen gardens. So 46%, maybe that's a goal we could reach again. But notice that it's not 100%. So what I'm trying to say is, yes, we're coming home and we need to come home. And that's what this movement is about. But we also need to transform the rest of the food system so that the rest of the food system is answering to what we want. And so I'll tell the story. And
you're having too much fun. You have no idea how much time has gone by because you're telling you're having so much fun. So I'm trying to get you to tell people about your book. And you've only got a couple of minutes left. Do you want to tell people about a story in your book or not?
Okay, I'll tell them a story.
Boston?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
It's one of the grandmas of the food movement. Started back in 1991, a project called the Food Project. What better name? And it was started by a fellow who noticed in the early 90s, 1991, he said, I'm seeing that our youth are disconnected. They're disconnected from each other, from the land, from their food. This doesn't have to be. And what he decided, he created a project that lives to this day and that has influenced so many projects in so many states that have learned from this. So
what did he do?
What did they do? Is they created a project that brought inner city youth together with suburban youth. They put them together on a farm during the summer, and they pay them. There are three landmarks of this project. One is you pay youth to value their time and teach them responsibility so that they know they're valued and they know they have to learn certain skills and responsibilities. The other thing is that you are mixing people with different economic experiences and that you have them work on a rural farm and you have them go work together on the urban inner city neighborhood community garden or farm. And then this last piece is that you're also teaching them about leadership and it's about empowerment. So these youth are learning not necessarily to become farmers, but they're learning to become the next generation's leaders.
And is there a story about what happens with the food they raise?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's amazing what they do. In 1 year alone, they raised over 200,000 pounds of 186 different types of fresh vegetables. They donated this to almost 50,000 pounds to homeless shelters. They sold it, and let me tell you, the youth were selling this, so they're learning business skills and selling skills at farmers markets in inner city neighborhoods. And they're also selling it through nearly 500 shares of CSA shares. So it's amazing what they're doing. They are helping to feed. Here's my proposition. If every community had the food project in their area, wouldn't our communities be transformed?
We got two quick comments on Facebook I want to try and squeeze in here before we run out of time. One from Ron who says, local, not more than two counties away. I guess he's talking about what he does as far as food is concerned. And then Robert, and unfortunately Robert doesn't say what community he's in, but he says, I source my food by growing my own pork, beef, chicken, eggs, and vegetable garden that I freeze and can food from, and I sell the extra meat to help pay for it all.
Awesome. These guys are part of the grassroots food movement. This is what it's all about. People are making choices to influence their system. They're reclaiming their power by voting with their money, voting with their seeds, planting seeds on their own. Let me say that there's a...
You think that decisions people make about food translate to whether they choose to be powerful in their lives?
Absolutely.
Or not. Explain that to me.
In an age where there is so much that is disempowering us, this is a place where people can have influence by exerting choice.
So if I go to the supermarket and I grab a bunch of Hostess Twinkies off the shelf, I am disempowering myself. If
yes.
I do something else, you think I'm making a more powerful choice. Tell me what the something else is.
The something else is choosing food that is raised in a way that you are aware of, that is fresh and healthy, and that is nourishing, actually going to nourish you and not just give you empty calories. You're making a choice to do something that is going to connect you to your community and help build your community. Build your local economy.
Would you prefer that I not even go into a supermarket, that I shop completely from farmers markets or roadside stands? Or
no, I'm not saying that. I would say shop at local farms, roadside stands, a farmers market, and go into that supermarket and talk with the manager and say, where are the local apples? Where's the local cheese? Where's the local meat? Can't you provide that here? And that is how we become powerful. And it's happening. You walk into our local in Charlottesville, in our local Harris Teeter, and they're now selling local apples. When I first started teaching food systems planning in 06, let me tell you, you couldn't find them at all. And now they're there. And that's because people are exerting choice and power. And we need to celebrate that.
So if you had 15 seconds to sum up what you want people to do, what might you say, Tanya Declacop?
I would say, come into your power and choose your food locally, buy locally, and become a steward of our environment by connecting with your farmer and learning how that farmer is raising food for you.
Our guest has been environmental and community mediation activist Tanya Denkla-Cobb, Associate Director of the Institute for Environmental Negotiation based at the University of Virginia, and author of the new book, Reclaiming Our Food, How the Grassroots Food Movement is Changing the Way We Eat. Tanya, it's been such a delight spending time with you. Thank you so much.
And a real honor to be with you, Tom.
You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org, then clicking on Programs, and then clicking on Insight Archives. If you go to that page, you'll find links to more information about the work that Ms. Cobb is doing. And if you go to the Virginia Insight Facebook page and click like, you'll get access to a whole bunch more information about these broadcasts there as well. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more Insight.